First of all, I would like to thank the organizer for inviting me here. And I've really enjoyed the seminars and all the talks, and especially while I'm a cancer researcher, and I will give you an example of AI in our cancer research. It was nice to hear the IBM's talk. Okay, but now my presentation is more practical. I will present our view of how the data should be organized and handled and regulated. But I will start with the biobank issues because I come also from the Biobank of Eastern Finland. So what is biobanking about? We collect tissues or fluids and data related to the samples. That's basically the simple idea. We can collect all kinds of tissues, all kinds of samples. And the idea is that everything that is like extra taken during the treatments can be used for the research. It just has to be collected and stored safely and securely. We also can get the samples and data from the prospective research collections, and that has been occurred, of course. And we think that basically the samples are a form of data, so they can contain genomic data or transcriptomic data or metabolomic data or any kind of data. And then when we add clinical data to that data, it really is valuable. And the motivation for biobanking, of course, is that we want to accelerate the translational research, precision medicine that is coming very fast to our society, and drug development, for example, of course. And these kind of data sets are often mandatory for clinical trials and also very valuable for health informatics. And in biobanking business, we talk a lot about real-world data. So we have the register data, but we collect the real-world data that is very valuable for health informatics and things like that. Why we see that the biobanking business is very precious in Finland? Of course, we have the high-quality public healthcare, as all of us know. We have electronic health records of hospitals for tens of years now. We have national registries, which is not occurring in all countries, because we have obligatory regulations that the health data needs to be input to the registries. They are of good quality. Then we can identify all the individuals by the social security number, and then of course the most important thing is that the people are supporting medical research. That is not the case in all countries. Like in Southern Europe, people are not very interested. They are very suspicious if you ask their data and samples. But in Finland, over 90% of individuals will give us the samples, will sign the consent for us that we can use the samples and data for medical research. And of course, Finnish government, the society has understood this, and the legislation in Finland is very modern and very supportive for this kind of things. But I have to say, of course, that the latest legislation was supposed to be at the parliament this year. But I think that we will need to wait for the next government to accept the genome law and the next phase of the biobank law. But we have things like this GDPR now affecting. Okay, the hospital biobanks, like the biobank here in Middle Finland, we collect the consents from individuals during the treatments and diagnostics at the hospitals, and healthcare personnel are collaborating with us, and we collect the samples for storage during the treatments, and when we get the consent signed, then we can get the data from the electric resistors, and then they organize the research infra that people can then, researchers and companies can then utilize the data. And one example of the kind of data is digital pathology data. That is one of the good things about digitalization. Pathologists nowadays they don't use microscope a lot. They use computers to analyze the tumor sections and stainings, and we can use artificial intelligence to help the pathologists, as we heard before. So this is a good thing for the biobanks and also for the data lakes. And what about the data that is available? This is just an example of the breast diseases in the Kuopio data lake. We measured how many laboratory analyses have been done for the individuals that have given the promise for us, the consent for us, that these data can be used. So we classified the breast diseases to benign and malign, and so we have a little under 2 million laboratory results for the benign cases and about 3 million results for malign. And these can all be used. And when we start to look into more detail what kind of data these are, so for the individual measurements, we have 1,400 measurements with lower than 500 results from the benign group, and then 1,200 for the maligns. And for the measurements with over 100,000 results, we have 39 measurements or different kind of lab tests for the benigns and 50 for the maligns. So this means that there's a lot of data that can be analyzed and taken to these sophisticated analyses. And then from the benign cases, we have about 3,000 diagnoses, different kind of diagnoses that can be associated with the breast disease. And for the malign group, we have about 4,000 diagnoses. So these are readily available and pretty simplistic. It's pretty simple to take these, extract these to data sets and start analyzing. So at our data lake, we have about 100,000 patients with the consent. And for them, we have about 4 million diagnoses or events. And at the Kuopio region, we get 4 million lab results per year in addition to this. And this is an online system so that we continuously get the new data. Okay, then about the data lake environment, how we think what it should be and what it is now. So the entire data lake consists of all the data that comes from the university hospital, also the data that comes from individuals who has not given the consents, and then of course from the Kuopio city, so the SOTE data, and then the biobank has a smaller part of that lake where we have the consented individual data, and we can administrate that portion and do the analysis for those, and then readily pretty simply, it's pretty simple to give that data sets outside of the data lake because it's we have the consents from the individuals. And the data is coming from the Kuopio University Hospital and from the Kuopio City, and the aim is to get also other close communities at the North Savo region to the data lake. What else is needed is that we need to be able to collaborate with the national pillars of the health growth strategy of the government. So we need to discuss and communicate with the biobank cooperative, which is a cooperative of all the Finnish biobanks, hospital biobanks. Then we need to collaborate with Genome Center that is going to be formed officially this year. That will take care of the clinical genomics data, genetic data. Then we will, and we are already collaborating with cancer centers and local cancer centers like the Cancer Center of Eastern Finland. That includes also the hospital here. And then the Neuro Center that is nationally formed or led nowadays from the Kuopio, and then from the developing drug development center in Turku, and also other national strategies that are being formed. So the communication has to be very active, and the data needs to be transported or transformed back and forth. Okay, this architecture is now at the Microsoft Azure Cloud, as is also in the Helsinki University Hospital region, and we have a third big data lake, health data lake in Turku, but that it's in local servers, so it's not in a cloud system. And there we are able to extract these data sets, and also we develop analysis tools there. And of course, because it's a cloud structure, it's a scalable system. And this is something that we are collaborating with Pekka's group here, so we will test these different kind of environments, how the tools, analysis tools, should be done with most effective way. And these are of course the possible tools that are available at the Azure Cloud now. And our aim is to be able to prepare these analysis services. First of all, of course, this platform need to be safe, so because it contains a lot of sensitive data. We will create different kind of modules for analysis so that that the effectiveness studies, health economic studies are pretty easy to do there. And then we will do analysis services for customers, for academic groups, for private companies, and of course for SOTE units. What else is needed? So this is all the healthcare data that is collected from the healthcare units. But what else is needed? As has been talked today, we need the my data. After all, we need this data, so we need to be able to understand what is going on, what is really important in health of a human being. We need to know what happens to the person, and of course it comes from the individuals themselves. And this is what we are gathering or planning to do. And of course there you can't see the lower part of the graph, but it's just about the circle of measuring the data, interpreting that data to the and how to take care of the patient, what kind of treatments should be given, and then monitoring that, and then again analyzing the data. So also what else is needed is life quality data. So we need to know how the individuals feel, and also the lifestyle data, the nutrition, just as we heard before, diets and physical exercise and things like that. So we need to include that also to the, like, the hard data coming from the healthcare units. And in addition to this, we need the environmental data. We need to know what was the weather like if we at a certain time point, or what was the air pollution situation in a certain point of time, and things like that. And then we are starting to have all the data that is needed, and that will be, has to be collected. And I'm not saying that this is not possible to do nationally, but I think that I would prefer these node-like collections of data, because it means a lot of work. And if that's taking care only nationally at one point, it's, I think it's too difficult. So nationally, we think that the Finland composes the most advanced testbed in the world. We have the engaged people. We have the functional healthcare system. We have the digital health data. We have the genomic data and biobanks. We have the government backing. So this is a very valuable combination, and the best in the world, simply. Okay, now I will go to my example of how the machine learning can be utilized here. Of course, this, it can be said, as has been heard already, that it can be used in all parts of the... You just name the data and you can start using AI. But this is our one of the examples. And this comes from cancer research. Here you can see the left figure is the statistics of males in Finland, and in right you have the women. And this is the annual number of cancers until 2013, and then the prediction to 2030. And you can see that with the males you have the prostatic cancer that is coming increasingly frequent, and with the women the breast cancer is the number one cancer. And why this happens is, of course, one part is really true, so that this cancer is really becoming more frequent, but of course a part is about diagnostics. We have good diagnostics tools, and some of them give us false positive results and causes too much of stress to the patients, because they really wouldn't be needed to have any treatments. So we would like to identify these individuals who have some symptoms but don't need really any treatments, and that's why we think that the prevention is very important. And at this phase, I would like to remind you that the cancer is really a genetic disease. So when you have cancer, the malignant cells have a chaotic genome. As you see in the left here, you have the normal chromosomes, 23 pairs, and in the right you have 59 chromosomes from a colorectal cancer cell. So you see that when we talk about DNA and mutations, the genomic as a whole is really a chaotic situation. But the genetics also has an effect on the cancer risk. And that comes from the normal genetic variation of an individual. And that's, of course, a basis for precision medicine. We heard today that we all have the same number of chromosomes, but we all have an individual genome. We have tens of millions of variations in our genome, and they all in a way code the individual phenotype of us. Like the skin color and things like that. And we can use these, analyze these SNPs or variations and do simple case control variation frequency analysis. That's called genome-wide association screening, and the typical Manhattan plot, like here we did in 2017 with an international consortium, we did a breast cancer association analysis. And here you see the chromosomes of individuals, and these are the single points, are the single variants in the genome, and this is a p-value. So the most important p-values are like minus 300. And we think that, okay, it's a golden standard that p-values over 10.-8 is a significant value. But these are done individually. A test, just a test marker by marker, variant by variant. And then nowadays, when we evaluate the risk of an individual, we'll calculate the risk scores of each significant variant that the person has. And we thought that, okay, would it be possible to identify the combination of these SNPs a person has instead of collecting only the information from the significant published markers? This is the data set as it looks like. It's a simple test of a sheet of 200,000 genetic variants with the in each of the column, and then in each row one individual data. And we have the genotypes from the cases and controls. And we published this in scientific reports last September. So Hamid Behrawan is our postdoc, and he's leading our machine learning group. So we think that there's need to identify the individual as high risk, so that we would then concentrate our screening methods to them, and then the individuals with lower genetic risk, they could be screened not so heavily. And then, of course, this works as an example for all of the multifactorial diseases, because we can use these same methods for all kinds of diseases, common diseases. Okay, and this is the system that we utilized. Simply, we identified the most important markers that in combination predict the cancer. And this is our material. We had cancer cases from Kuopio and Oulu, all together about 1,600 individuals. And of course, there were challenges because of the number of the individuals and the number of the SNPs. But we did this anyway. And the results looks this. When we take the published significant risk factors and calculate the polygenic risk scores and do this analysis, we see that this our model works at least at the same level or even better. It's even better to in precision to predict the cancer cases just by using genetic markers from the blood DNA. And then we wanted to validate these results, so we did. We took all the genes within 5 million bases from these close to these genetic markers, identified the genes, and then checked how these interact these genes from this data set. And we identified the very common entities, molecular entities that are important in breast cancer. Here is the estrogen metabolism genes, and then the apoptotic or apoptosis related genes. So we think that we were able to identify the important genes from these variants, and we believe that this model really works. And of course, now we are including to this model all the demographic markers or the demographic features that we have from these individuals. For example, familial status and number of children and use of estrogen and things like that. So we can combine the genetic and the demographic features and see how we can really really identify the or group individuals to the according to breast cancer risk, and then we include also the we will include the imaging data for this. But at the end of the day, I would like to remind that when we talk about healthcare and about diseases, there's always an individual behind all the numbers. As Angelica Jolie, who has this BRCA1 mutation that is really affecting to the risk of breast cancer, she had to choose whether to take the risk of getting cancer before age of 60. That is a risk about 60%, I think. And then, or then removal of the ovaries and breasts. That would reduce her risk for cancer to the, basically to the level of normal individual. So these are the decisions that the individuals have to make after we get this data to them. Okay, that's what our data lake looks like in Kuopio. I would like to thank you for your patience. Thank you.
Thank you, Jari. Are there any comments or questions?
Auli Pere from Business Finland. I have two questions. One related to what you told about my data. You said that you recommend collecting the individual data, non-clinical individual data, locally and not nationally. So I understand that one way would be utilizing the so-called Omakanta system, but you have probably something else in your mind. What are you possibly planning? And the other question is related to your breast cancer case. As the example was based purely on genomic data, what do you then propose? Do you propose possibly that every Finn should be genotyped or even sequenced so that this information could be used on the population level, or how should it be used in practical clinical work?
Thank you. Very good questions. For the first question, I would say that if Omakanta would work perfectly, that would be okay. But we have to wait for that. So before that, we have to find ways to collect the data. And of course, there's a lot of technical issues that we have to face before that and solve. But I think that we have to start with pilot cases and then continue with that. And then the other question about whether we should, collect the genomic data to be able to create individuals' risk profiles for diseases in Finland. That would be, of course, be nice. But the thing is that we have to evaluate the cost of that, and also we are at the face of a thing that the fact that we don't know yet how really important these risk profiles are. Should they be incorporated to the healthcare systems or not? Of course, we have these very important factors like pharmacogenetic factors that are pretty simple to incorporate. But then we have a lot of risk profiles, like I showed here, breast cancer. It's not a simple way to incorporate. We can't say still that okay, give us our blood sample, we can say tell you whether you will get breast cancer or not. I would say that's also a good thing, so that we can't resolve everything, but we manage with the risk numbers. And of course, when the Finnish Genome Center is being formed, there has been negotiations whether all the babies born in Finland should be genotyped. That would be an option, because then we would really benefit for that and create like good plans for the individuals that have some very high risk factors for diseases. We could prevent diseases and prevent the suffering of an individual. But of course, there are a lot of ethical questions that should be negotiated and discussed.
There are no other questions. Thank you, Arto, once again. And now we have 15 minutes coffee break. We are 2:15 back here. Thank you.